cellular.com today. Requires 2 lines of service, age validation, and credit approval. Subject to system and area limits, taxes, and other fees apply.
The number one destination in Kane County, Old Republic in Elgin. Watch all the games on 45 giant TVs with drink specials all day. This Sunday, catch the 3 p.m. kickoff against Washington at Old Republic, an official Miller Lite Bears headquarters, located off Randall Road and Route 20 in Elgin.
It's Bears, Commanders in a Week 8 matchup. Can Caleb Williams and the Bears regain their momentum out of the bye week and improve to 5-2? Keep listening as we get you ready for the game right up to kickoff. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented by your local Hyundai dealers. We are Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Sports Station. WSCR Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is being brought to you by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868.
I'll tell you, I am fired up today because how about them Bears?
Dan Wiederer from the Chicago Tribune again.
Bears beat reporter and enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
Your boy Dan Wiederer was on the radio last week with Speaks. Mm-hmm.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
Talked in London about Caleb being bossy.
He bossy, but in a not like mean way, but like his own way. So take that as you want.
I mean, does it please you? I mean, is that fondue?
Doesn't please me, but it's good to see.
We want it to be a fast Friday and a fast focus Friday.
Dan Wiederer.
His name is Dan Wiederer. Wiederer time.
Bears.
The Take the North pod. Dan Wiederer talks football with you.
I think we know what Dan meant, right? Like, does that please you? I don't know what he meant. And certainly DJ Moore was a little unsettled by the possibilities that arose. I guess we should just ask him directly.
We can do that. This segment with Dan Wiederer is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
So what did you mean, Dan Wiederer, when you asked DJ Moore if Caleb pleased him in that way?
Hey guys, I'm pleased to be with you on this beautiful Friday afternoon.
It doesn't please us. Same way it pleases you.
So let me tell you a little bit of the epilogue to that whole exchange there, because it carried on after we left the press conference room. We're going back to the locker room, and I was like, DJ, I didn't say, you know, I didn't have the connotation that you were taking from that. And then we walk into the locker room. He goes, Caleb, you'll never guess what they asked me in there. He's like, I'm not going to name any names, but they asked if I please you. And I was like, oh, hold up. Like that was not the verbatim way that question was asked. That was not the back and forth. God. But so then, like, I'm in my car on the way home being like, man, like, what was a better way in the moment to phrase it? I was like kind of beating myself up over it. I'm like, does it satisfy you? No, that doesn't work. That one doesn't work either. And that, like, I guess does it encourage you? That was probably the way it needed to be asked. But that went viral in a couple places, and I was getting texts from friends I haven't heard from in months saying, like, bro, what are you doing?
Does that titillate you? I mean, you might have gone with that. No, but what do you, like, does it encourage him? How? Funny how? What do you mean? Like, how would it encourage him that? Just being bossy,
just because it shows a quarterback trying to take the proper type of ownership of the offense and the guys around him and trying to get things right. And so that, you know, look, it's been a weird few weeks with DJ and the way he's talked about Caleb, and he leaves things open for interpretation. And I think what he's trying to say is that he sees a young quarterback who's kind of discovering his voice within this group. You know, it's one thing to kind of be bossy when you're a Heisman Trophy winner and you're working with college kids, and now you've got DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and Cole Kmet and a 40-year-old veteran in Mercedes Lewis. You have to learn how to kind of communicate your demands in that way. And so I think DJ's trying to say that he sees a young quarterback coming along. I'm not sure if he's doing it well. He's probably doing it better than I'm phrasing questions, though. So we'll leave it at that.
All right, Weeds, what do you believe about Jaden Daniels' availability?
You guys have observed the league long enough to kind of have a sense for what you think this is, right? And it feels like gamesmanship out of Washington. I don't have any scientific study numbers in front of me, but I would be hard-pressed to believe that there's more than 2% of quarterbacks who miss practice on Wednesday and Thursday and ultimately play in a game on Sunday. I'm not even sure how much work Jaden Daniels did today. It sounded like Dan Quinn was insinuating that he was limited at most in the practice that they had out there. And it just feels like a little bit of a gamesmanship, competitive advantage type maneuver. I think the Bears are preparing as if Marcus Mariota is going to take the first snap for the Commanders on Sunday. I always find this amusing to some extent, because the coaches that are playing the game on one side always think that they're pulling one over on the opponent. And then when you're on the other side of it, you go, oh, we don't really worry about what they're doing. We just focus on ourselves, as Matt Eberflus said today. Yet Matt's one of the first ones to play these injury games when they're working on his side. And so it's always just really funny what coaches think that they can do to challenge an opponent when ultimately most of the time it's just a lot of wasted energy.
I know it's a small sample size, so we don't really have a book on what Jaden Daniels is. How, if any, do you think are the ways that the offense changes or doesn't because it's Mariota instead of Daniels?
Yeah, Jaden has an electricity to the way he moves right now that's dangerous. And so you have to be a little bit more contained with that. I mean, Marcus can still get out and do some things on you, but it's not as electric as what Jaden can do with his legs. And so it changes a little bit defensively the way you want to rush. Marcus has got more experience. And so there may be some things that you want to strain a rookie quarterback with and test him out with and see if he can handle that you are not going to experiment with against a veteran who's seen a lot of things in this league. And so I think when you hear from the defensive players and the coaches inside Hallis Hall, they say, look, like we watched the last 3.5 quarters of that Panthers game and conceptually the Commanders offense didn't change. The skills of those two quarterbacks are a little bit different. And so you just kind of have to be aware of that. And that it changes a little bit of the way you make calls and the way you operate within a game, but it doesn't really dramatically impact the way you plan and prepare for the game.
Mariota is 2-0 against the Bears, with the Titans in 2016 against the John Fox team that we should never speak of again. And then once against Justin Fields in Atlanta when Fields got hurt. There were so many design runs, which we all called for, and then he got hurt with the design runs, and Mariota had some big plays there. He knows what he's doing, but from the stuff that I've heard and been reading and talking to people a little bit this week, Dan, there's a thought that Mariota is still that guy who leaves a clean pocket with a tuck and run before he should.
I was trying to remember that game 2 years ago in terms of Mariota's impact on that. I looked up the stats, and he had a one touchdown pass, one touchdown run, 131 yards passing, nothing that blows you away. I sort of remember it might have been on his touchdown run. He ran over either Brisker or Gordon in emphatic fashion. I think one of those guys wound up in the protocol from that collision at the goal line, if I'm not mistaken. I have to go back and check that out. Look, I also think he has the ability to be turnover prone, Speaks. And so, like, yes, he may leave a pocket every once in a while and do the whole tuck and run thing that you know can be effective, but also isn't the best way to play the position at all times of a football game. And I think you can probably try to force him into some mistakes. Overall, in 7 games, the Commanders have not had much problem with ball security. They got 3 giveaways the whole season. That's second best in the league. And so for a Bears defense that has really thrived on taking the football away, they're going to have to find a way to do it against an offense that really hasn't given it up very much. But with the quarterback change, maybe there's a couple more opportunities.
How worried are you now about Jaquan Brisker overall and Jaquan Brisker, the football player?
Yeah. I mean, the first question is really easy. It's just, it's so hard to see through the big picture lens when you're in it like he is right now. But man, this is 3 consecutive years where this will be multiple games missed due to a concussion. And so there's definite human side worry to that. They're 100%. You say, man, like you got to start to think about your future outside of football and your big picture life decisions and the things that you've got to go through. Now, look, Jaquan has not gotten his second contract yet. You know, and so you're at a stage in your career where it's really dicey, the kind of decisions you have to make and the ways you have to plan your future and the risks that you have to take and figure that out. When he gets cleared and comes back, like Jaquan only knows one way to play the game. And so I don't think that you will be worried about him taking on a different playing style when he gets back, but you'll definitely be worried about the playing style that he does have contributing to another one of these possible things. And it's really hard over time when you see the toll that this game takes on people to kind of separate the two. It really is just, it's difficult to kind of to look through that lens and see the human side of it on an everyday basis when you're fully immersed in a season like this.
Everyone's brain is different. All concussions are different, but this story is related. Tua Tagovailoa is going to start for the Dolphins in Week 8. You know, the will of some of these athletes will look past some of the medical advice and some of the life concerns. And I think you make a good point about Jaquan not having that second contract yet. I can't imagine that he's not going to play as soon as he gets a chance to. But it is scary stuff. Dan, you wrote about Caleb Williams making connections with his targets and aggressively trying to make those connections. And I don't think that's related to the question about pleasing anybody, by the way. But what are some of the things that Caleb has done to go out of his way to satisfy what seems to be like a genuine desire for human connection on his part, but also a useful tool for a quarterback and veteran wide receivers?
Yes, because it's very intentional on Caleb's behalf. He really does make an extra effort to create those bonds within a locker room. It's reaching across the offense to the defense. It's understanding how to forge the connections with the coaching staff so that when you're in moments of challenge, you can be open and honest and have those lines of communication feel like they are active and reliable. And so there's a lot that goes into this. And it really started striking me late in the pre-draft process when you kept hearing this from people that were around him or in the Bears case studying him and trying to figure out what he was going to bring to the table, that this is very meaningful in his whole quarterback journey. And it's something that traces back to his high school days. His head football coach at Gonzaga College High will be in attendance on Sunday in Washington and sort of drove it into Caleb that the concepts of trust and togetherness are big for a football team. He didn't have to sell Caleb really hard on that, because that's something that he's all about, is building that trust and togetherness. And he is really a guy that when you talk to his teammates, current and past, they say like he is really fueled by team success. As much individual attention and achievement as he's had in his football life, he really, really feeds off the collective accomplishments of the team. And so it's been a part of the story so far. I think it's helped him get off to a good start here. You hear the way, everyone from Roma Dunze to Mercedes Lewis talks about him. You hear Cole Kmet's conviction in who he is as both a playmaker and a leader. And you go, man, there's something here in terms of Caleb's real human and natural ability to connect with the people around him on a deeper level.
Is there value in what they had in the trip to London? And I know that you don't want to put too much on the
you
idea.
You do, though. You like it.
I'm curious, like hearing those guys talk about it as like a bowl trip, I thought was interesting, because I haven't really heard NFL players talk about London that way. And I don't know if that was by design. I don't know if that's one of those things where Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus are like, we're going to take our guys away from London and from downtown London.
Put them in a big spooky mansion.
We're going to take them away and allow them to have like kind of a training camp feel where they're isolated. I don't know if that's real or that's just how it just broke down logistically and whether or not it matters. That's why I'm curious to get your opinion on it.
Yeah, no, 100% it was by design, and Matt believes in that as well, in creating those team bonds, and they felt like that was an opportunity to do it. Since you move training camp back from down in Bourbonnais, you don't get those opportunities the way you used to when you were separated from Hallis Hall and you were forced to live in the dorms at Olivet Nazarene University. And yeah, there's guys in the hotel, but people go their separate directions at the end of the day with camp in Lake Forest. And I do think that trip to London and the early arrival there gave them extra time to kind of hang out and just be there. You know, they didn't have anything else pulling on them. They didn't have anywhere else to be. And so I think there was some value to the bonding that went on there. You've heard me talk about it since the middle of summer. They just got a good mojo that just continues to build. And it's why I have sort of this unfamiliar confidence going into a game like Sunday's, where you would kind of want to be like, yeah, let's see it before we believe it. It just seems like this team's got a lot to believe in right now. And I think part of it is what you just talked about.
Man, I'm with you. It's a little spooky to have those positive vibes, but it's pretty darn cool. Couple questions on the defense. One is this: Zach Pickens going to play probably for the first time that we've seen in a long while, right? How does he fit in? We're going to see him on the edge every once in a while. We had seen that before he got hurt.
I don't know what kind of football shape he's in. So if he's in there, it may be very limited. I wouldn't be shocked if he's, inactive on okay. Sunday. We'll see. We'll okay. see which way they go. They're pretty healthy up front, but they are getting some guys back. It's Pickens. Travis Homer is in line to come back at any time. Larry Borum can come back and give you some more depth to your offensive line. On the topic of just playing defense in general, I think there's great respect for what this Commanders offense looks like, particularly with the running game. I think we've talked so much about the quarterback for the first month and a half of the season with them that you forget how good they've been running the football. And Brian Robinson Jr. is a real weapon. And Cliff Kingsbury's got a scheme that challenges you in a lot of different ways. They can run inside zone, outside zone, gap scheme, you know, zone read stuff, and really do it all very effectively. And so you heard that a lot throughout the week, particularly from the coaching staff, that the versatility and the consistent productivity of this Commanders run game is something they've really got to be aware of. And we obviously have seen a couple times early in the season, the Bears struggle to consistently stop the run. That's going to be a big part of Sunday afternoon.
And in that regard, how does the potential absence of Kyler Gordon affect the defensive plan? Can Josh Blackwell do everything Kyler can do?
No. And you have to be aware that he can't do all those things. And so you have to just kind of adjust and adapt accordingly. That's going to be absence that's felt. And I'm not so sure that Kyler will be back ready next week either. It'd be really interesting to keep an eye on how quickly he's able to get over this latest soft tissue injury. But no, Josh Blackwell is a different player. And when you're calling the defense, you better be aware that he's a different player. You can't turn him loose the way you can turn Kyler loose. Kyler's got high level instincts for that slot cornerback position, and he can do so many different things for you that he really does become a chess piece. Josh Blackwell's the next man up. He can be very reliable, but he isn't the same type of dude there.
We were talking about Eric Washington this week, and he's become my favorite member of the coaching staff. I know some people go at HT because he's always a great quote. But I like him, and maybe it's because I understand coaches like that are always mm-hmm. worried about the other shoe dropping. I feel like with everyone patting the Bears on the back and everyone talking about this being a top five defense and all the good feelings and good vibes that this team has had, I feel like he, not a voice in the wilderness, but he's like, hey, guys, this Washington team's offense is no joke. I don't care who's quarterbacking. Yep. I like that there is always kind of an urgency to him when it comes to getting his defense prepared for the next opponent.
Even in the 10 minutes each week that he stands before us, there's so much presence to the things that Eric Washington says. He doesn't have to spill a lot of words to get his point across. And you just listen to him and you're like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, like he teaches you something. He says things with authority. He's a specialist in real talk, when you guys know how much I love those types of guys where he just hits it head on. And he's very aware that this defense, as good as it's been, has a lot of challenges ahead of itself. There's going to be a lot of good offenses, a lot of dynamic playmakers that they have to stop. And so they can't feel themselves too much. Luckily, they've got a group of players on that side of the ball that are really edgy competitively and really, really want to be elite and excellent. And it seems like a great match to have him in here this year, to pair him with this group at their current state. But I'm with you, Lawrence. He's a lot of fun to listen to. And I really do think that he brings that presence and that purpose that you need, particularly in weeks like this, where you've got a very winnable game. And if you handle your business, you go on the road, you win a football game, and you walk back into your building on Monday morning at 5-2, the whole world is going to seem brighter if you're able to do that. And all it takes is that intense focus that Eric Washington sort of calls for.
Yeah, you know, Washington would probably be my first pick, but Lawrence has him, so I'll take Richard Hightower. If I had to pick the third of the four guys that we hear from, I'd go Eberflus over Waldron. Yes, I'd have Shane Waldron fourth on my depth chart of coaches who speak on the regular. I don't know, man. There's some – maybe you can talk me out of it, Dan. But it is Shane is Shane going to keep progressing and keep evolving this year based on the communication and the interaction with the players? Because he'll need to, especially when the division games come.
I think you should make this a plan to have the weekly power rankings of how the coordinators and the head coach did at the podium. At the end of the week, you can put up your rankings.
I like it.
We'll roll with it. It'd be a good little segment. You're right. I mean, to Shane's credit, after Indianapolis, the things that they did to kind of get everyone calmed down first and then comfortable with what they're doing offensively was positive. And it spoke to what we talked about a few minutes ago, the positive back and forth and those open lines of communication and no one being stubborn enough to just kind of put their foot down and go, it's going to be my way or the highway. There's dialogue, there's back and forth, there's the willingness to evolve and adapt. It's going to have to continue. This offense is on a great trajectory right now. The competition's going to get harder. The quarterback's going to struggle at times. You're going to have to adjust to what other people are doing to adjust to you. And Shane's got to show that to us over the span of the next 11 games that he can continue to be a positive influence on this offense. It's been mixed results from September to October. And then obviously we're going to see a game on Sunday that's going to challenge him in a new way. And hopefully they are able to keep everybody unlocked.
Weeds, it was great seeing you last night for a really wonderful cause with Vaughn McClure and Jeff Dickerson and the foundation. Why is it important for you to be there at that event?
Yeah, we could probably go for 30 more minutes with that. But look, like you guys know, I first met Jeff Dickerson in college, you know, 1997. He was in a fraternity with several of my close friends from high school. And so I knew him on that level, then knew him in the professional world, one of the most generous humans you'll ever be around, one of the best friends in terms of keeping you grounded and keeping your perspective through stress in your career and an NFL season. Like, Jeff was always that voice of reason to get you talked off the ledge. And then Vaughn was at the Tribune when I started, you know, for the first few months. And even after he left to go to ESPN and cover the Falcons, he was a resource and a very willing, helpful, valuable resource in just sharing his contacts and sharing his knowledge. And, hey, this is somebody you might want to talk to. And let me introduce you to this, you know, front office executive, two dudes that were just tremendous people. And so to see, Lawrence, last night, as you did, the turnout and the outpouring of support for those guys, it's really meaningful to see them kind of have their legacies live on. It's terribly sad to look up at those pictures that are on display and realize that these guys were taken from us as soon as they were. But it is wonderful on a night like that to kind of feel the spirit and the outpouring of generosity that people have in their name. And so I hope that continues for a long, long time.
I hope so too. And it's also, I think, so apropos that there's a scholarship in those guys' name and then you see the people that benefit from it and what they can do. It's really beautiful. Like we were all kind of, you're stuck between grief and joy. Yep. Because you're celebrating their lives, but you also understand like what we've lost with both of them not being there. But it was wonderful to see everyone like celebrate it. And it meant a lot to me and how you guys took care of JD for the last few months of his life on the beat is something that, as his friend, I don't know I could ever repay what you guys did. And it's really beautiful that whole thing is a full circle when we're all together. And I just want to say thank you again for everything that you meant to him and he meant to you.
I mean, thank you for saying that. Thank you. Thank you guys for all your support with that. I mean, it's hard to fathom. I mean, honestly, there's still disbelief that both of those guys are not with us. There was a picture up there last night from a brewery tour we did at Bourbonnais at Brickstone. And it felt like that was 2 weeks ago. And it was like, you know, 9 or 10 years ago now. And you're just like, man, time flies quick. And I just miss those moments more than you realize. And it's really good to see a night like that bring people together the way it did. And again, for me, like the pinball between the college crowd and the media crowd.
Yeah.
Like, man, it's really cool to see the different orbits that Jeff and I both kind of overlapped in. And it was a lot of fun.
Weeds, we appreciate you. Have fun in Washington.
All right. Pleased to be with you again today. So have a great weekend.
Thanks. Thanks, Dan. Dan Weeder.
It's a very pleasing segment.
I think the
next one is also going to be pleasing.
Yeah, man. He's an absolute legend. And when recording with Bob Costas last year for an episode of my podcast, The PBP, he and I, we hit it off and we kept talking like on the Zoom for 20 or 30 minutes afterwards. And now trade trivia questions every once in a while. It's pretty awesome. So 20-year-old Matt Spiegel is pretty damn excited to talk to Bob Costas. And we get to talk Dodgers, Yankees, and World Series and more with Bob next here on Spiegel and Holmes on The Score.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the World Series. I'm Bob Costas.
Today, as you may or may not know, it doesn't matter, is the opening of the World Series.
In a year that has been so improbable,
Kirk Gibson, have you ever had a feeling like this?
Well, it's hard to match, I'll say that.
What I'd like to suggest is that we change the work detail tonight so that we can watch the ball game.
Left center field, Grissom on the run. The team of the 90s has its world championship.
Well, Mr. McMurphy, what you're asking is that we change a very carefully worked out schedule.
Well, change never hurt, huh?
A liner off Nagy's glove into center field. The Florida Marlins have won
that's not necessarily true, Mr. McMurphy. You know, some men on the ward take a long, long time to get used to the schedule. Change it now and they might find it very disturbing.
A pop in the shadow left. The New York Yankees, world champions, team of the decade, most successful franchise of the century.
Schedule. I mean, they can go back to the schedule after the series. I'm talking about the World Series, Nurse Ratchet.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
It is indeed the Spiegel and Holmes show here on 670 The Score. There is Chicago Bears roster news that we will get to before the top of the hour. But first, on the day of day one of the World Series, we are pleased to bring in the man himself, a baseball legend, and the exact person we'd like to talk to contextualize this incredible matchup that begins tonight. He is Bob Costas, joining us right now on The Score. Hello, Bob. How are you?
I'm fine, Matt. That's a fulsome introduction. I hope I can halfway live up to it.
We think you got it in you. Lawrence Holmes, my partner, Chris Tannehill, the producer, along with Shane Reardon. Thrilled to have you, sir. So this possibility of Dodgers and Yankees has circled the postseason for like many, many years, but now we actually get it. What resonates to you about these two franchises finally getting a chance to match up again?
Well, of course, there's the markets, the simple arithmetic of the two largest markets and what that does for ratings. There's the history. It's not recent history, but it's significant history. But most important is the fact that both rosters are dotted with MVPs and future Hall of Famers. So there's all kinds of marquee here, and it's marquee that the average casual fan, not the sort of person who's scanning the box scores every day or watching the MLB Network regularly, this storyline, these stars on both rosters, I think cuts through and reaches the average fan, the casual fan.
Bob, when it comes to eulogizing Fernando Valenzuela, I wonder, for someone like you, who you believe in baseball and you also believe in justice, how do you go about telling the story of what he meant to Mexican-Americans in Los Angeles because of the building of Chavez Ravine? How do you tell that story inside of eulogizing one of the great Dodgers of all time?
Yeah, where Dodger Stadium was built and the surrounding area displaced a lot of Mexican Americans, and there was considerable resentment. And I think especially at that time, there was a thought, would we be so cavalier about displacing white Americans or people who were not marginalized, even now to some extent, but especially then? So there was understandable resentment, and the Dodgers had never had. They pioneered black stars in the major leagues, of course, and that's to their credit in Brooklyn, but they had never had a Mexican superstar. And Fernando burst on the scene in 1981 in the most remarkable way. He won his first eight starts, and five of them were shutouts. His ERA after those eight starts was a buck and a half, or maybe it was 0.50. I better check. But it was something ridiculous. I think it was 0.50 after those first eight starts. And he was so different. He looked different. His windup was different. Looking to the sky before he refocused on the plate. Throwing a screwball, which not that many pitchers threw even then, and almost no one throws it anymore. It was just something very distinctive about him. In addition to the fact that he was so good, Rookie of the Year and Cy Young Award winner in 1981.
And that issue of the Dodgers fans being displaced, forever associated with Fernando's arrival, for sure. As we look at this thing with Dodgers and Yankees, the assemblage of talent is outrageous, right? Has there ever been anything like this in World Series history, to have all these stars present at the same time in their prime?
Well, I think if you look to the Yankees and the Dodgers in the 40s and 50s, you'd find plenty of it. The Dodger lineup included Jackie Robinson and Gil Hodges and Duke Snider and Roy Campanella and Pee Wee Reese, all of whom are in the Hall of Fame. And the Yankees had DiMaggio, an overlap, and then in the early 50s, DiMaggio retires. You got Mantle, you got Yogi Berra, you got Whitey Ford. I mean, there's a lot of star power there. Even the managers, Walter Alston and Casey Stengel, are in the Hall of Fame.
So, Does all that, is all that run around your head? Like, I'm thinking of Algie and Frito when I woke up today, or like Cookie Lavagetto. I mean, it's like, it's ridiculous how far back this stuff goes, let alone into the 70s with all the teams. It's like, it's fun to have all of that swimming in our baseball heads, is it not?
Well, you know, you and I would not really know the names of Algie Frito and Cookie Lavagetto were those early radio calls of Red Barber not saved. Because a lot of calls didn't exist at that point, but they were World Series games, and Red Barber had calls. They're both from 1947. Cookie Lavagetto had a pinch-hit double in the ninth inning. Bill Bevins of the Yankees was working on a flawed no-hitter. I think he'd walked like 9 or 10 guys. But there were guys on base, and I think the Dodgers had already scored a run. And then Lavagetto doubled off the right field wall at Ebbets Field, and that won the game. And Barber's call, he's one of the great Hall of Fame announcers, was naturally excellent. And then also in that series, Joe DiMaggio hit a ball at the old Yankee Stadium straightaway left to the bullpen, was like 402 feet. And Gianfrido raced back onto the warning track and made an almost impossible catch. DiMaggio seldom showed emotion on the field, but as he approached second base, the camera caught him kicking at the dirt, because he thought he'd either cleared the wall or it was a double for sure, and Gianfrido had robbed him. And Chris Berman acknowledges that one of the calls that he used all the time was from Red Barber in 1947. Joe DiMaggio up, holding that stick down at the end. Big fella sets hat and pitches. A curveball high outside for ball one. So the Dodgers are ahead, whatever it was, 4-2. But the crowd well knows that with one swing of this bat, this fella's capable of making a brand new game again. Joe leans in, outfield deep, around toward left, the infield overshifted. Here's the pitch, swung on, belted. Deep left field, back goes Gianfrido. Back. He makes a one-handed catch against the bullpen. Oh-ho, doctor. He went exactly against the left field wall and reached up with one hand to take a home run away from DiMaggio. And then night after night on SportsCenter, Chris Berman, every home run. Back.
That's amazing. I didn't know that etymology.
That is a nice piece of broadcasting and baseball history.
When you think about it, the history of the franchises includes some of the greatest voices in baseball history. Red Barber, Mel Allen, and of course, Vin Scully.
Yeah, it really does. And we got Bob Costas doing a Red Barber impression on The Score on a Friday afternoon.
Which is not a bad thing. Oh. Bob, Spiegs and I are both baseball romantics, and I know that you are too. It's interesting to us because, you know, we're clearly, like, we're still young technically for what the demo of viewers is for all-star games in baseball. But I wonder, we're very passionate about it being what you're talking about, that this is a matchup that allows for casual fans to kind of jump back into baseball. Why do you think baseball fans themselves are excited to share this with other people, even though it might not be the teams that they actually root for?
Yeah, because the reasons we just discussed, the history, but especially the present star power on both rosters, starting with Ohtani and Judge. You know, it's just classic in every way. Now, of course, since it's baseball, it could wind up being a 4 or 5 game series. It could wind up, even if it goes 6 or 7, not having all that many classic moments, although that's unlikely. We have to see how it plays out, but it certainly holds the potential for some great baseball, and some of it will evoke the history of the two franchises and their encounters with each other.
Bob, the leak said the median age of ticket purchasers has dropped from 51 to 46. Maybe this game that we love, and here we are talking all this old history, is going to get a boost and get a little bit younger, perhaps a little bit healthier on the strength of this.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, right? Like what can baseball do?
Or maybe it's a one-off. You know, the Cubs and Cleveland in 2016 went 7 games. The 7th game got 50 million some viewers because the storyline was so relatable. The Cubs and trying to break a more than 100-year curse and the setting of Wrigley Field, although the 6th and 7th games were in Cleveland, all those things easily relatable. This has the potential for storylines and individual stars that everyone can relate to, as I said before.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that that carries over. This is not to disrespect the achievement of any team, but the Rangers against the Diamondbacks, which is last year's World Series, that didn't engage the nation at large to the extent that other matchups might have. Whereas, and look, I'm a baseball first guy, so I'm not beating the drum for football. But here's the truth. If Jacksonville's in the NFC now, right? I'm not even paying attention
AFC,
to football anymore.
But that's okay.
They're in the AFC. Okay. Yeah. So Jacksonville, I'm serious. That was a serious question my part.
It's a good one.
If my life, apologies to all the Bears fans who are waiting for whatever roster news you're going to impart at the end of this half hour. If my life at this point, now I once knew a whole lot about it because it was my job.
Yeah.
And I once had a greater affinity for it than ultimately I wound up having. But if my life depended on naming half the head coaches and half the starting quarterbacks in the National Football League today, I would begin making out my last will and testament. But the point I'm getting to is this. Let's say we take whatever team in the NFC you think has a comparably low profile nationally to the Jacksonville Jaguars. When it gets to the Super Bowl, it's still the Super Bowl. Maybe it would be marginally less than if the Chiefs are in it or the Cowboys came back to life and were in it because they're national teams. There's lots of national teams. Close to half the league has some kind of larger following beyond their own immediate fan base. But the nature of football, with one game deciding it, every game is the equivalent of a seventh game in the playoffs, every game is the equivalent of a seventh game in baseball, basketball, or hockey, and it's played at a time of the year when people generally are home in the wintertime and on Saturdays and Sundays in the postseason, and you get to the Super Bowl and it's a national holiday in effect. So you don't need the greatest Super Bowl ever to ensure that the Super Bowl ratings the next year and the year after that will be as high as they usually are. You don't need that.
No, you don't. And the fans are conditioned to know that any team can be good and worthy because of the salary cap. Bob, I am not I am not pro owner, but I'm pro salary cap. And it gets me painted as like anti-player or anti-union, and it's just I'm pro cap because I want what the NFL has, and there's no way to get it without it, in my opinion.
Well, I think baseball has mitigated the problem to some extent with the luxury tax and with the expanded playoffs, and in truth, by isolating some of the smaller market teams in the two central divisions. Now, that doesn't explain either the Cubs or the White Sox, which are not small market teams, especially the Cubs, who have built-in advantages revenue-wise. That doesn't explain that. But you got a better chance, if you're the Tigers or the Guardians or the Twins, you got a better chance being in the Central than being in the American League East. And the same thing goes for teams like the Cardinals and the Pirates, if they ever snap out of it, and the Reds. They're better off being there than being in the East or the West. And then you have the expanded playoffs where, hey, you can win 85, 86 games and then get hot until this year. And it's a real rarity. It happens only rarely that the two teams with the best records in their respective leagues make it to the World Series. In fact, under the new format, prior to this year, the first 2 years of this new format, three of the four World Series participants were wild card teams. So in baseball, that has mitigated the problem that you're rightly concerned with. I'm not saying it's eliminated it,
but it's mitigated.
But it has reduced it.
Yes, it has. Bob, you are an absolute national treasure, and our listeners know it. Been great to see you on MLB Network and during the playoffs doing play-by-play as well. Thanks so much. Enjoy the series.
Matt, thank you very much. And Lawrence, stop dominating the conversation the way you have over the last several minutes, really.
Look, I got our premier baseball guy at the station sitting to my left and allowing him to talk to you, baseball's greatest historian.
Get a room.
I'm good with falling back. But Mr. Costas, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being such a good audience. Have a good week.
You got it. You cut him off. That Bears roster news is necessary. We'll get to it.
The Bears roster news is necessary.
It's amazing, actually.
It is. is, and there's a couple of things that we're going to get into. It is now official. We'll let you know what the moves are and discuss it next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I definitely listened to 6-7 The Score growing up for sure. Driving around in the car with my dad, you'd always have it on.
Afternoons on The Score.
You've got to make some moves. You can't keep 11 offensive linemen on the 53-man roster.
Just tell us the mini fridge is safe, right? Doug Kramer?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah. I would think so. You know, I would. That would be my guess. That would be my guess.
The absolute terror I felt when Brad Biggs allowed for the possibility of Doug Kramer not being on the team. Today's moves are related somewhat.
And Brad Biggs had the story first in the Tribune. It's now official. The Bears have put out a release. The Chicago Bears have made the following transactions. Released the following player, fullback Kari Plotzingame. Waived the following player, wide receiver Velus Jones Jr.
Whoa! So, Plotzingame, as a fullback, I think that means that the mini fridge, Doug Kramer, is going to get rostered as a backup center and occasional fullback.
I mean, that's what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, that you can see how they're going to use him. I do think there are some areas where obviously you would want someone like Plotzingame to be when it comes to like outside runs and things of that nature. But Doug has showed in short yarded situations he can do what they need done.
And he's actually pretty agile. So they've used him in motion a couple of times. This is good news for our mini fridge as well, since I brought the sticker paper in. And Tanny can print some stickers of his glorious design. But the other news.
Well, I mean, it's also, like, I just want to stay on this for a second. Like,
okay.
The roster flexibility of keeping Doug and cutting Kari, like, actually makes a whole lot of sense. The other news, Velus Jones Jr., he was inactive. Like, there's no reason to keep him. You're getting Horner back, so you don't need him in the running back room anymore. He wasn't going to crack this team as a wide receiver. He was just there.
Travis Homer is back.
I said Horner. Homer.
Yeah, I got you.
I trust Nico in the backfield for the Bears.
Maybe not right now.
Over Velus Jones. I trust. I mean, who do you want to return a kick? Velus or Nico? Nico would catch that thing. He would. Velus. I mean, opening day kickoff fumble. It sealed his fate after being a bubble guy. How could you trust him again? And then they had him on the inactive list for all this time, but now you got actual useful people. There's no spot for Velus here.
This offers up an opportunity for all the injured guys to play a role on the active roster as well. We're not done talking about this. As a matter of fact, we're going to get Olin Kreutz's thoughts on it next here on The Score.